Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality, and is about discovering your place in this great universe, from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life, and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about decisions. How do we make them? Why does our world seem everything is just, I have to do this, that, left or right, up or down, and is it right or wrong? Do we always still have those vision boards and we say, we'll put everything on there, things will come to fruition? Or maybe we're looking for the law of attraction. Well, that worked for some, doesn't work for others. How about the pros and cons list? Is that really famous these days? And we say, well, should I buy a house? Left or right, when it gets to the end, I'll make my decision. And still others are saying, I'm waiting for the spiritual path. I'm waiting for someone or something to guide me and take me. I'm going to sit down on the couch and wait. I know it'll show up. It will ring my doorbell. So many different ways of thought these days. Is it really that we're looking for one way to be able to make decisions and live out our life, find our mission and our purpose? Or perhaps maybe it's a little bit of each. And it's how we just have that perception on what we are truly looking for. Sometimes we're looking for, I want that. And if it doesn't come with all the bows, the stickers, and the little chains on the side, we say, everything that comes along, oh no, it still didn't come. And we diss all of those gems that have been sent our way. Today, my guest is Paul O'Brien. His book is Intuitive Intelligence, Making Life-Changing Decisions with Perfect Timing. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dr. Jeanette.
Oh, you're so welcome. Paul, don't you think that making decisions these days, it's almost like, should we just cast it into the wind, and still others say, I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way, right?
Oh, my God. It's harder than ever at the same time that we have to make more decisions in a year than our grandparents had to make in a decade, and we have to make them while we're being bombarded with all kinds of information on all sides, most of it bad, and it's a very confusing time. It's very difficult to make good decisions, particularly the big ones, which is what I'm focusing on in the book, Intuitive Intelligence.
And really, those big decisions, and the worst thing ever, and we know we've all been bombarded by this, is when you go to make a decision, and those that are vested in you taking a certain path or staying where you are start to come out of the woodwork, and they're like, it's almost like you're being cast upon, you know? How dare you do that? You can't do that. This is why you can't. And it's almost as if they have predisposed your path before you even got started. Don't you think there's a lot of that also these days?
Oh, definitely. There's a section in the book entitled Be Receptive to Good Advice. And in that section, I point out, you're not going to get good objective advice from the people most likely to be giving you advice, which are friends and family, because precisely like you said, they're invested in you not changing too much. They're threatened by you changing too much. And so if you want to make a big decision, you need to get advice from people who don't have a vested interest in what you do, but are just trying to be helpful from a point of view of greater expertise. So you're right. We get all kinds of advice that's well-meaning, but not very helpful.
You know, I as soon as I picked up your book, I wrote in the front page, I wrote, how can we know what intuition is when the driver wears drag? In other words, you know, you look at something and you're saying, I don't even know who the person is that's driving the car. What illusion are they wearing today? Is it my heart, my mind, my past, my future, my memories, my past lives, da-da-da-da-da-da-da? And, you know, you have to almost put a label on who the driver is to be able to see where those decisions are coming from, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. This self-knowledge is a dicey proposition, and it's the work of a lifetime. And it's not easy because, like you say, we have all of these different selves. You know, there's a theory in psychology called subpersonalities, and we have, you know, lots of them. And they're in, different ones are in charge at different times. And we have this thing called the ego, which is sort of like the mask that we wear and our self-image and the image that we need, that we feel like we need to prop up. But then there's the heart and the wisdom of the heart. And I think the intuition is more related to the heart than to the ego or to the mind. So there's a lot of parts of ourselves, and self-knowledge is an unending process that goes through our entire life.
Let's look at the point when we're trying to make decisions. Are we looking for an outcome? Is that outcome in a box? And you spend a lot of time, decades, maybe almost your whole lifetime trying to get to that point. So in essence, is a success considered a linear path, or does it have, you know, can it be a web? Because, you know, there's so many times we say, but this is the path I'm on, and it's a silo existence. You know, in other words, don't let anything inside my glass because it will disrupt the energy in my source. Yet, we look at it, we say, but you try to expand here, and you hit a wall over there, and you find out something else here. And really, truly, is success just being standing on 2 feet by the end of your life, or is success something that you have to attain?
Well, I have a whole section on the challenge of success in the book. In fact, it's chapter one. And I make the point that we have to define success for ourselves. And ultimately, what success, well, I think generally what success means is getting what you want or creating what you want. But if what you want and what you want can change, and it will change through your life, but it has more to do with process than with outcome. Like, for instance, a lot of times things happen that are challenges or obstacles, et cetera, and we think, oh, it's the worst thing that ever happened. And sometimes it's basically the best thing that ever happened in hindsight, because if that hadn't happened, we would have gone down this path that we were sure was the right path for us to go, and we would have wasted a lot more time pursuing something that wasn't really right for us, instead of being able to change directions. And so, you know, it's kind of a magical process. You know, 5 steps forward, 3 steps back, and things happen, magical things happen called synchronicities. All of these amazing happenstances occur, these meaningful coincidences that happen for a reason. And we need to pay attention to those things rather than thinking, well, you know, I have to define myself and then stay on that path with extreme persistence my whole life. I think this is one of the big problems that we force young people, young adults into. You know, they're expected to choose a major in the direction of some career path, you know, when they're 20 years old, and then sometimes they go deeply in debt, sticking to that path in order to get the credentials that that path requires in terms of a degree or a master's degree or whatever, and they don't even know themselves. They don't have their brain doesn't stop growing till they're 26. I think this is a really, really bad idea to tell people, you know, figure out what you want to be when you grow up and then commit to it and go deeply in debt in service of that instead of experimenting. And that's what I recommend that people do in their 20s is don't go into debt. Try things, experiment, and see what fits for you, what fascinates you, what you're naturally interested in, what you're naturally good at, and you don't. That's a process of trial and error. So, it's really not a linear path at all.
What about the idea of? I think when you're early in life, it's really about setting up your values, what you are about, your morals, your kind of compass, so to speak. When we say what is a value these days, you know, if you ask a 20-year-old, they're like they have no clue what you're even talking about. Yet you can ask an elder. And they're pretty much stuck in their form of what they believe a value is. And somewhere in the middle is about what values truly are. What is your concept on what a value is?
Well, I think a value is whatever is most important to you, and these evolve throughout our lives. You know, most young people value popularity. You know, there's a lot of young people, you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up, and they'll say, famous. And so they spend a lot of time on Instagram and social media, you know, trying to get a lot of likes, and they become very obsessed with that value of being popular or being well-liked and getting a lot of attention. So that's a value. That's a value for them. It's not a very high value. It's not going to produce a lot of happiness because it comes with a lot of insecurity when you're not getting the likes that you or somebody else is getting more than you, et cetera. And then as people get older, you know, they define. I think people are they tend to the ego tends to want to have a permanent fixed solution to the problem of life, and so they don't really grow and learn very much. You know, it's like I say there's two kinds of people. There are people who are comfort oriented, and there are people who are growth oriented. And they're young their entire life because they keep learning and growing and they don't stop. But most people are comfort oriented. They get to a point they say, well, this is who I am, and I'm not going to change. You know, I don't want to change. I just want to pad my cell and be more comfortable, and so they basically consider change to be a negative thing or a not a friendly force. And I suggest in the book that one visionary belief that people should try on or could try on is change is my friend as opposed to my foe. And if we can embrace change as a friend and continually question ourselves and question our values and let them evolve, we're going to have a much happier life, the happiness being the byproduct of meaning. So we're going to find meaning in life to the extent that our values represent what's highest and best within ourselves, and that's a process of ongoing self-discovery that goes all through life. I mean, wisdom is hard won, and it takes time, and it takes experience, and there's no reason for there to be any halt to it. And I think people who get stuck in their values or their morality or however they define their values stop developing wisdom in favor of being safe.
Let's also talk about the idea of progression and progression through life, progression through a complex decision, progression through whatever you're doing in your life. And when you talk about synchronicity in your book, you know, synchronicity is almost that little kind of abyss where you feel like everything is just working out. There's nothing poking at you. There's nothing drawing you away. There's nothing tethering you to another sideline. And when you say about comfort, it's almost is that point where you're in a different kind of abyss where you kind of don't exist. And it's almost like the two dichotomies of two different radio stations, yet where most of the time people live is in the static in between, don't you think?
Yeah, I think most people tend to gravitate more towards the security side of the spectrum. But, yeah, I mean, we have these two. If you think of the spectrum of security on the one side and autonomy or freedom on the other side, you know, we're complex beings, and we're kind of have this, I think all human beings have this inner conflict between our desire for stability and safety and security on the one side and our desire for adventure and learning and novelty and curiosity on the other side. And, you know, we have both of those. Everybody's got both of those camps. But it just depends on how insecure a person is, depending where they land on that spectrum. Young people, and particularly these days, young women and women, and you know, since feminism in the last 40 years, there's a huge drive towards autonomy and self-sufficiency and freedom and adventure and self-exploration and self-sufficiency. All of that autonomy stuff is people are way over there as opposed to the way it was, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago when women were dependent on men, and so they were more over on the security side and looking for a provider and all of that. So there's these sea changes that happen at a societal level, but they happen in all of us, you know. When we're kids, you know, we tend to be more risking and adventurous and maybe, you know, a little bit reckless. But as we get older, we tend to become more security driven. So yeah, you're right. We're caught in the middle of that seesaw.
Let's talk for a second too about when you are caught in the middle and things start to happen. We say, where did they come from? It came out of the blue. I hit a wall. I don't know what it's all about. And what's really happening now is you see a lot of trauma and blocks that have been in people's memories or stored that may have happened in their childhood or in their young adult lives. And these things are starting to come forth, and they're saying, where is that coming from? I don't know. And they're running to mental health, or they're running to an addiction. It's sort of like, I don't know where this thing is, but this dark shadow had better get off of me. Don't you think that, you say in the book about, you know, those need to be cleared up first. Well, in that case, almost everybody's got one of those skeletons in their closet, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. We all, I mean, I think just about everybody's had some level of trauma. There's no such thing as perfect parenting. And so we're all kind of wounded. It's part of human nature, I think. And I don't think that you need to be completely healed in order to start making enlightened decisions by any means. It's more of an attitude. It's more of an orientation. That's the important part. In other words, if I'm like on the path of healing because I am doing therapy or I am doing something to expand my comfort zone, and I'm doing something to feel my feelings and let them heal. You know, they say you got to feel it to heal it. If I'm willing to feel it so that I can heal it, I'm going to make a lot better decisions than if I'm just guarded against feeling it and resorting to some habitual self-medication in the form of any number of addictions just being shut down, so yeah, we have self-discovery involves realizing what happened to us when we were children. And I'm a big advocate of inner child work and of exploring our personal histories, not so much to blame our parents, but more to understand how we are wired. Because I think rewiring is possible, but it's not. In fact, I know it's possible, but it's not possible. Using it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also, too, talk about invocations. Can you share a little bit about that? A lot of times people will say, so is this think therapy? Is this if I say it, I'll make it? Or, you know, that thing, what is it, fake it till you make it kind of idea. What are truly invocations all about? Because you share them a lot throughout your book.
Well, I have a chapter on archetypes and on invoking archetypes. And I think whenever we do a prayer or an invocation is, a form of prayer or an affirmation, what we're doing is we're channeling an archetype. We're basically communicating with the universe or God or however you want to think of the spiritual realm and the divine and the powers of the divine. So we're calling them, we're invoking them, we're opening ourselves up to them, we're becoming receptive to inspiration and guidance from above. And that's what I think of as an invocation or a prayer. And I'm a big advocate of that. I do it all the day. I do it every day. I do it every morning. I do it all through the day. You know, it might look like I'm talking to myself, but I'm really talking to Divine Mother or, you know, grandmother or, you know, my own mother who's deceased. You know, it's like I'm basically channeling these energies that are in me. You know, it's sort of like, everything, we are a microcosm of the universe, and we have a spiritual dimension to the human being. You know, you have physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. These are all levels of health. These are all levels of healing. This is how I explain it to my atheist friends. I said, you don't have to believe anything. This isn't about religion. This is about healing. And if you are going to deny your spiritual self, you're not going to be able to heal your ego. You're going to be stuck at the level of ego. And the spiritual dimension is about calibrating your ego with all that is, with the universal with the universal source. So, you know, you're really not all that important. And the ego wants to act like it's the center of the universe, especially when it's used to being in control. So I think that invocation is a way of reminding ourselves that we're not all that, that we're not in control, that we do need help. It's like in the 12-step programs, you know, they talk about higher power and surrendering to a higher power and admitting that you're powerless, blah, blah, blah. I don't really like to say I am an addict or I am powerless. I don't like to say negative affirmations like that. But I understand where they're getting at is that we have to train the ego to take direction from higher self, from the soul. And that's what invocations help us do.
And do you think that when you have these big decisions coming up, I think a big decision could be caring for oneself when you're busy. It could be taking a job. It could be helping your family members. It could be what school does your child go to, just all the way down to what is my purpose in life. That could be a decision too. Do you think that when we have all these decisions come up in front of us, it could be any type. It's just those are our point in our life. And how do we work through that, yes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of decisions that we're facing. We make 1,000 decisions every day. There's the trivial, mundane ones, like should I take this route or that route, or should I buy this brand of toothpaste or that brand of toothpaste? And we don't have to put a lot of thought into those. A lot of them are just governed by habit, which is a very efficient way to do it. Then there are bigger decisions, like, you know, which school to send my child to, et cetera.
Right.
And what I'm really writing about in the book are life-changing decisions of a personal nature that have to do with changing careers or changing relationships or figuring out what is the right career for you. And so those are the kind of decisions that I'm really most concerned with in the book. But there's a lot of technologies for making decisions that are important, but not necessarily life-changing, like where to send your kid to school or that. And there's techniques for doing that involve logic or that can involve using a divination system.
Can you talk about the I Ching? Because a lot of times when I ask people about I Ching, they're saying, I don't know. And it's sort of like, well, you snagged a sentence from someplace and you put it in your book, right? So I think you're the perfect person to answer that about I Ching.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been a student of the I Ching since 1969. I've studied it and used it my whole life. I've never made a major decision without getting input from the I Ching. The I Ching is a divination system. It's the oldest and most revered one. It's about 3,000 to 4,000 years old. Tarot cards are about 1,000 years old. That's another one. And what a divination system is it's a set of archetypes. And there's that word again. In the I Ching, we have 64 archetypes, which are based on different configurations of the yin-yang energy. In tarot cards, you have 78 cards, so you have 78 archetypes. So you take this collection of archetypes, and these archetypes represent a set of the variety of human experiences or energetic configurations that we are confronted with in life in various situations or relationships. And they're not all warm fuzzy things. It's not like angel cards where every one of them is a warm fuzzy. This is a set of archetypes that reflects life, and some of them are kind of dark and foreboding and posit challenges, but they give us, so there's the archetypes, and so when you're concerned about something or you're trying to make a decision and you meditate on that and you become focus on that, and then you cast the I Ching, which is a process of tossing three coins six times, and then that creates a pattern. And the synchronicity principle, which was defined by Carl Jung to describe how the I Ching worked back in the 30s, the synchronicity principle says there are no accidents, and that the way those coins land that you tossed while you were focusing on an issue of concern is a meaningful coincidence. And you look up that pattern, and that's going to pull up one of the 64 archetypes, and you look it up in the book, 64 chapters in the book. You look up the chapter that is indicated, and you read that, and you read between the lines, and that archetype is going to give you a sense of what is the right approach to take vis-a-vis a relationship or vis-a-vis a job prospect or whatever dilemma or decision that you're confronted with. And so it's the same thing with tarot cards. The theory is you shuffle the cards, you're the one who shuffles the cards. When you pull a card or you pull some cards while you're focused on whatever it is, mm-hmm. the card that you get represents an archetype. Now, all of the archetypes are inside of us to begin with. This is not like something coming into us from outside of ourselves. This is actually stimulating a part of ourselves that, and calling it forth. So it's kind of summoning forth some wisdom from a different part of ourselves that can have some wisdom to bear on whatever it was we were asking about.
Isn't it almost as if you're taking your energy, giving it form and matter to be able to speak? I almost see it as that.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's kind of got a magical aspect to it. It's definitely a mirror of your energy. It's just that we're not always conscious of all the parts of ourselves, and sometimes we need somebody to sort of like shake us up a little bit and stimulate a way to think outside the box. I define divination as a way to stimulate the intuition to think outside the box around problems that logic can't handle. So I don't think you need to use the I Ching or tarot cards or runes or any of the divination systems every time you make a decision. It's only when it's only when logic can't handle it. You know, if logic can handle the decision-making challenge, great. Logic's a good tool. It's just limited. But there's a lot of problems that logic can handle. You know, which route should I take? Well, logic tells me to take the one with the least amount of traffic. I don't need to cast the I Ching to figure that one out. So, you know, but there's a lot of problems logic can't handle, particularly things to do with relationships or negotiations or approaching a difficult conversation that needs to happen or timing questions. So that's when an I Ching reading can really be helpful because at the very least it gives us some distance from the issue so that we can be more objective, and it's going to stimulate our intuition so that we can come up with another way of looking at it and maybe other options. You see, like I had a counselor a long time ago. He said, there's always more than two solutions to any problem. And I was thinking, someday I'm going to write a book called The Third Solution. Because nothing is simply black and white.
Right,
and we get caught up in that. We get caught up in black and white thinking, right and wrong, and we're so determined to find the right answer and not the wrong answer. And actually, there might be a lot of other options that we haven't even considered. And that's what the I Ching helps us to take a look at.
Don't you think in essence, and in closing we'll talk about this, is that even when you're doing that, it's almost not always the, quote, answer that you're looking for from these systems. What you're looking for is the next question. Because you could draw something or do something or get some sort of an answer, and that answer will lead you to question yourself, something else, question. In other words, it takes you on another journey versus saying, here, do this, here, do that. It's sort of like, well, it's not going to give you all of the rocks in perfect alignment with a template to fill out. It's almost like it's casting and saying, how would you like to create your path? here's some options. Don't you think sometimes we get too stuck in saying that this is the way it's supposed to play out and we get attached to those outcomes?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when you get an I Ching reading or a tarot reading, you know, the real value of it is in reading between the lines and the new and the new questions that it brings up for you. You can't expect it to give you a didactic answer to, you know, where should I go to lunch today, or, you know, what's the meaning of life? You know, I mean, it might imply something or other, but basically the best kind of questions to take to it are, what's the best approach to take vis-a-vis XYZ? It could be somebody's name, it could be a situation, it could be a decision. And so you're looking for, it's like as if you're looking for advice from a wise sage as to the best approach for you to take or the best move to make next. And really that's kind of the theme of my whole book, Intuitive Intelligence, is how to make the right move at the right time. It's really about making a good decision and then executing it with great timing. And the I Ching can help us do that. There's a lot of time. You know, like, there's three approaches to any problem. You can either assert yourself and just, you know, do everything in your power to fix it now. That's the American approach. Or you can say, oh, man, I got to get out of here and retreat and run like hell. Or you can just do nothing and let the dark clouds pass. There's a time for doing nothing. Well, we don't know that in our culture. In our culture, we are type A. You know, we got to fix it as soon as possible and make it come out the way we want and try to force things. And that's in the martial arts, we know that there's a time to retreat. There's a time to do nothing. There's a time to let the other energy play itself out without attacking. So that's what the I Ching helps us do, is get a better frame around the three different ways that we can approach something. And then it'll throw in some timeless wisdom on top of that. But it's not going to tell you exactly what to do.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I'll just share this. I was moving from Arizona, and I didn't know where to go. And I had this in my head, and everybody's like, well, go where you can work. Go where you can do this. Go where you can do that. And it was sort of like, oh, man, you people are just giving my head. Just go away, you know. It was like I wasn't looking to go towards a job. I wasn't looking for an outcome of a purpose. I was just looking where to move to. And I did the pendulum. That thing that was swirling around on the entire U.S., and it was sort of like, okay, it says the U.S. I guess I have all these choices, you know. And I think also, too, we look at it and we say, are we looking for the end result for a certain purpose, or are we just saying we are open to everything? And when you're open to everything, sometimes you do need a little guidance, and all the things you shared today is how to be able to find that guidance, yes?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a term called co-creation. And what I like to think is, like, you know, there's me and there's higher power, and however I conceive of that. And we're working together. We're working as a team. And I have to do my part. I have to make decisions, and I have to make the best decisions I can, hopefully with the help of inspiration from above. But, it's like we're all in it together, and we have to learn how to cooperate with the highest parts of ourselves. And that's really what learning intuitive intelligence is all about.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people will say, but you didn't tell me the how-to, right? You know, don't you love they are always looking for, people are always looking to follow so that they can be as, versus saying how unique can each of our paths be, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody is one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that people should look for somebody to give them their answers and tell them exactly how to do their life. I think what we need is wisdom. We need self-knowledge. We need to understand ourselves and accept the fact that we're unique. We're not like everybody else, and the right answers for you are not going to be the right answers for everybody else. And in the book, I've got a whole chapter on self-discovery and how to figure out what it is that drives you and how to get in alignment with your heart instead of your ego. The ego wants to impress other people. The ego, you know, wants, it's never satisfied, it just wants to achieve, and it wants to impress, you know, whereas the heart is a much higher form of intelligence, and I think intuition is a function of the heart. And so we have to really understand, what is it that truly enriches my life, because it's something that I am naturally fascinated by. And a lot of people don't give themselves a chance to be fascinated because they're too concerned with winning the game of competing for attention and approval and success in material terms.
Yeah, well, Paul, it was such a great talk with you today, because I think sometimes people say, I need some guidance, and your book, Intuitive Intelligence, definitely has some steps for guidance. And others will say, I really have no clue. Well, the book is good for you, too, because you have to start somewhere. So thank you so much for joining us today. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. I run a nonprofit, and my website is divination.com. That's pretty easy to remember. And, you know, I have a blog, and I have a podcast, and I have three books that I've written, including a Western version of the I Ching, and this book, this new book, Intuitive Intelligence, which is just coming out in September of 2019. And the other site is for the book itself. It's called intuitiveintelligence.org, and it's all about the book and specifically. And so those are the two best resources.
Very good. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. It was truly a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Paul O'Brien, his book is Intuitive Intelligence, Make Life-Changing Decisions with Perfect Timing. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page for more information and to go directly to his website. And it truly is that there are so many things coming up these days. You don't want to go left or right. You don't want to be right or wrong, but you're just going out on the adventure of what is next. And yes, sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's difficult, but other times you say, I could use a little guidance. Well, intuitive intelligence is a way to be able to cut through some of the chase, turn down some of the static, and maybe see through the trees. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.